Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, Jake Gutierrez. Good Wednesday morning to you, April 14th, 2021. Let's talk to Jarrett Sutton about basketball. Hello, Jarrett Sutton. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Still reeling from that lengthy Lizak segment. If you have a forecast or any information about the weather, we'd love to hear it because we're still...
I need to start prepping myself when I have the 8 o'clock hour of, like, I need to know what the weather is just in case you guys miss the weather.
Well, or if it's not given. That's a problem.
You guys covered Salvi's batting average, though, so that's good.
I like, what did he say? It's 314, because that's the way you present the batting averages.
Right, 314.
What are you hitting, 314? All right.
He really did a good job of laying out the whole concept of early in the season, you know, your batting average can fluctuate more. So that's something we hadn't really thought about before.
I spaced out during that. I really don't know what he said. So is that what he said?
Yeah, pretty much. That was what he,
yeah.
In a more roundabout way.
I look forward to that segment, though. I mean, I can wait. I can wait for Lizak, you know.
Well, whether you can or not, you're going
to. You will.
It's irrelevant whether you can.
I guess it doesn't matter.
That's a good mindset to have, though.
No, it doesn't.
That's right.
Okay, so let me, I know you worked for the, for New Orleans, and so, and that's why we love having you on. You can talk college basketball and NBA, but I wanted to ask you something just kind of, you know, just a overall kind of big picture question right now about the NBA, because I was very disappointed to see that Jamal Murray tore his ACL and is out for the year, right? Because I mean, especially during the playoffs in last year's weird, you know, pandemic playoffs, he was one of the guys that emerged as a real star. And I like watching, that's one of my favorite teams to watch. Like, you know, first of all, I root for New Orleans because of Jarrett Sutton. That's the way we do things. And then, but my other team has got to be the Utah Jazz, because when you present to me Quinn Snyder and Jordan Clarkson, and that used to be my favorite team when Jerry Sloan was a coach and John Stockton. So yeah, I love the Utah Jazz, but Denver's one of the most entertaining teams to watch. And of course, Michael Porter Jr., because they got Michael Porter Jr., and that's why so many people are getting tickets in Denver.
They got Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter! I'm getting tickets.
But what does that do? Because, like, right now, I know things will change, but, like, Denver's the 4 and the Lakers are the 5. I mean, that alters the Western Conference, doesn't it? That was a big injury and a bad deal for NBA fans.
Yeah, big injury. This whole thing where we're, you know, we have 72 games this season, it's all condensed, though, into this timeline. We had to rush the schedule together starting, you know, at the end of December, started around Christmas, and our season ended in the bubble October the 12th when the Lakers won a title. So there wasn't much of an off season, and when I talked to you guys, you know, in that period before we started the season, we were finishing up a draft and going in right into free agency. That was probably a 3-day free agency. I mean, it was unprecedented what we were doing as far as draft, free agency, and moving from one season to the next season. And I knew that there was a risk of this where, you know, we're playing games. In fact, we just finished a stretch where we played 8 games in 12 days. And our coaches were talking about how it's just been exhausting. I mean, it's great. We're playing a lot of games, and I'd rather play games than practice and sit out. It's great for fans, but it's the wear and tear, right? And I'm remembering back to 2012, the lockout year when, you know, Derek Rose had that torn ACL, and that's when things started to get questioned around that schedule. Dwight Howard had injuries, and it was sort of a controversial topic back in 2012. When we had the lockout, that was a different season, 66 games, and we were putting those 66 games into a span of about 4 months. And there were just game after game after game, and it's great for fans, but it is the wear and tear, especially with the physicality of the NBA right now. Jamal Murray was having a career year. You know, this is his 5th year in the league. He was averaging over 20 a game. He was shooting over 41 from 3 and 48 from the field. He was having a great year. And he's the heart and soul, really, of that Nuggets team. I know Jokic is sort of the MVP favorite right now, and deservedly so he is. But Jamal Murray is the guy that kind of makes that team go as far as mentality, guard play. I'm reminded of what you were talking about, the bubble with him and Donovan Mitchell going back and forth, and how fun that was. This one hurts because I don't know what it's going to mean for next year, too, with his recovery time. I think the ACL is, especially with Jamal from just what's out there, it's a significant injury where the tear, I think, is going to require more time away from the floor, more time in rehab. And I think players are looking at this as, you know, we're trying to get this season in and we're trying to do 72 games. It's going to be competitive with the play-in tournaments, especially in the Western Conference with where we're at. That's going to be fun for fans, but I'm nervous about this too with our roster and our young players' wear and tear. We've had guys out. We have Nikhil Alexander-Walker out right now. We had Brandon Ingram and Zion out. We have Josh Hart out right now. We're dealing with a lot of injuries. Josh won't be back until the end of the year, and we're kind of being hit with the injury bug right now as well and just trying to weather the storm, and I think every team's trying to do that. So that's just really where we're at. It's frustrating for players, I'm sure. This is something we had to do to kind of stay on a timeline for getting this season completed and getting back to a normal timeline next year after the pandemic. So this is just what we're dealing with right now.
So when it comes to teams that have had injuries, like let's say the Lakers, do you think in the once the playoffs roll around, it could be a positive if guys actually had to sit out for a while because of that load management you're talking about?
Absolutely, yeah. I think, you know, the Lakers being at five, I wouldn't look too much into that, right? I mean, they've had AD out, LeBron out. Now the Nuggets are going through this. The Clippers always going to look at load management with Kawhi. You know, this is just kind of a part of where we're at in the calendar portion of the season. We still got, you know, probably 20 games left, give or take, with all these teams and the battle for the West and seeding. You know, I'm sure the Lakers would love to be at full strength, but I'm sure LeBron would tell you it's been nice that to have time off, even though he's dealing with injury and you're rehabbing. Your workload and those knees and ankles and hips, that the wear and tear of playing extended minutes, especially games that have gone into overtime and games that have been, you know, high leverage games for guys playing significant minutes, and then you're turning around and having a back to back, and you're only playing 72 games. That load management's been tough for coaches to really manage. Right? How are you going to handle the load management? What games are you playing your starters, your stars in? What games are you sitting them in? And I think the Lakers would probably look at that as, you know, we've got an opportunity to have these younger players step up, play minutes, get some time, play together, and then we'll see where we're at when LeBron and AD come back, and then they'll probably hit full stride from there. So, but again, seeding is important. I know we're not in a bubble in the playoffs this coming, you know, playoff season, but it is still important to get a good seed and try to help yourself so you can have an opportunity to advance in the playoffs and be competitive to win a championship.
So you mentioned the Pelicans, your squad, and of course, for people that don't know, you work for the what's your official title with the New Orleans Pelicans, please?
I am a college scout, Midwest Regional Scout, yeah.
Midwest Regional Scout. Do you have a business card?
I don't have a business card, no.
I want you to print those out so we can give those out to people. I like that. Midwest Regional Scout Jared Sutton, and so
keep him at the local restaurants around the city just to be Pelicans fan.
Hey, you can win free lunches. You have a business card.
That's right. That's right.
And so, I was reading an article at ESPN.com about the playoff race, and they wrote about the Pelicans and said there's two reasons why New Orleans will still land in the play-in, and the first one is Zion Williamson, who's playing his best basketball right now, dominating the paint and fueling one of the most exciting offenses in the NBA. And then the second is they say that both San Antonio and Golden State are flailing, and there's a good chance that one or both of those teams could fall out of the top 10 seeds. And so tell me more about Zion and how he's playing and the optimism that you have that they could end up in the play-in.
Yeah, Zion's been on a tear. You know, he's, for those that have been watching our games, you'll see him more at the point guard position, right? Which is just crazy to say, but it's where he's actually most comfortable. And he's having a historical season. remember, this is his second year, right? And a lot was made last year of his injuries and, you know, being in shape and conditioned. And, you know, now he's averaging over, you know, 27 a game. He's shooting 62% from the field this season. I mean, he's a wrecking ball in the lane.
Not many 7 boards, 4 assists. Good God, Jared Sutton.
Yeah, it's the most points per game by any player with over 60% from the field in NBA history, too. So, and it's also the highest field goal percentage by any player in NBA history with over 15 attempts. So it's not just the fact that he's shooting the ball at the clip he's shooting it at. It's also the attempts. I mean, he's been so efficient. He's had 30-point games. He's on the verge, too, Stephen, of having multiple triple-doubles. I mean, you're going to see that more consistently. He's passing the ball now at such a high level. And the reason why we moved him to the point guard position is he's just so smart. His IQ and feel is off the charts. And we saw this with LeBron. I'm not comparing him to LeBron. That's why LeBron moved to the point, was his IQ, vision, passing, playmaking. And, you know, make no mistake about it, you know, this comparison of Zion Williamson to Shaq, well, I appreciate that comparison because, yes, what he does around the rim and how he finishes and how he can score the ball, not a lot of teams can match him. It's a mismatch nightmare for teams with Zion. But Zion's a playmaker. He's also a passer, and he's got great vision, and he can really spot passes out of pick and roll, play in transition. The thing about it, too, is his jump shots coming along. He doesn't shoot a lot of them, but, you know, when he's in practice, and the other night he had a mid-range pull-up from the baseline that was smooth, he can do that. He's just not doing it a lot. So we're not even seeing the best Zion Williamson yet, which is, I think, what gets us most excited. And Brandon Ingram, who doesn't get a lot of talk in this, you know, realm with Zion, just because Zion has had such an unbelievable year. But Brandon Ingram was an all-star last year. We maxed him out over the summer, and he's a big pillar of our franchise moving forward. And Brandon's been terrific. He had 34 the other night against the Kings. You know, we got two really great players right now, and Lonzo Ball's playing at such a high level, too. He's been battling injuries. I forgot to mention Lonzo because we should have him back, hopefully either tonight or on Friday. But he's been battling injuries as well, and Lonzo's had an outstanding year, too, shooting a three ball. So I like where we're at. I believe in our chances to get into that play-in tournament, make some noise. It took us a long time, and this is another piece to this season. We did not have a training camp, really. We had a couple days where we were installing our offense. We have a, you know, first-year head coach in Stan Van Gundy, have an entirely new coaching staff. And this isn't for us. This is around the NBA. There wasn't a lot of practice time. And so for us, we've had some stretches where we've just been atrocious defensively, and we're finally playing better defensively, which is, you know, it takes time for young players. And we made a trade where we got James Johnson from Dallas, who's added a grittiness, a toughness to us that we really needed. Wes Iwundu, for K-State fans, we got him in that trade, and Wes started the other night. Wes has given us great, great minutes. So I like where we're at. We're still a young team. It's the Western Conference. It's a beast. And, you know, we got to find ways to get in this play-in tournament. And we're playing well, but we got to continue to play consistently and hopefully stay healthy during the stretch.
Yeah, we're going to break and then come back and talk more basketball and talk a little college as well. But it almost seems like last year you were hearing Zion's not as good as we thought he was going to be. He shouldn't have been the number one overall pick. He's not in shape. Look at all this. And now it feels like some people are saying, well, he's way better than we thought he'd be. He's even better, right? Like, because you're talking about, like, at the point, and now all of a sudden, these same people that were criticizing him and wondering, well, he's not going to live up to being the number one pick. Now, well, you know, he kind of reminds me of LeBron, and there's a little Shaq to him, like in one year. But right, he's averaging 27 points a game, and he's most, in that size and that body, he's most comfortable at the point.
You know, and
defend that.
Most games we're seeing Zion, and if you look at his numbers, he'll be, you know, 12 of 16 from the field, 14 of 18 from the field. He's shooting the ball better at the free throw line. He's rebounding the ball. His assist to turnover usually is around 6 assists to 2 turnovers a game, give or take. And now he's having these 30-point games, and Brandon Ingram, Brandon and Zion are starting to learn. They're our core pillars of our franchise, and they're young, and they're realizing how to play together now. And we, you know, adding Steven Adams, you know, Steven was huge. I mean, and literally, he's huge. He's one of the biggest guys in the NBA, and I loved him when he was with Oklahoma City, and I knew his impact of what it could be. And there were so many conversations around, why would you go get Steven Adams? You know, how are you going to play Steven Adams with Zion at the 4 and 5? And it's like, well, I don't think you know who Zion Williamson is. Right. That's probably my answer for you. But, you know, we're still figuring ourselves out as far as bench, and we have young players in Kyra Lewis and Jackson Hayes for Big 12 fans, Jackson Hayes out of Texas. So much was made around Jackson, and he's starting to emerge too, rebounding, finishing. He's shooting the ball a little bit better. And then Kyra Lewis, our speed, you know, when he comes off the bench, he just makes such an impact. Kyra Lewis is going to be a really great point guard. He's another name I'd put on your list of guys to see in 2-3 years that are going to be a part of our franchise that I'm really excited about of what they could bring to our team moving forward.
Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Xavier Pinson going to LSU, and then Nate has several questions about Ochai and how you evaluate him. And okay. he wants you to announce on the air that he should go back to Kansas, but he can't do that. Jared can't do that. He's a truth teller. He can't do that for you.
Okay.
Evaluate him and tell him to go. You need another year. No. Jared will tell the truth on this show. We'll take a break back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the show. Let's get back with Jared Sutton. Now, Jared Sutton, we make the transition to college, but we'll have some NBA sprinkled in there because some players are throwing their hat in the ring, throwing their name out there, whatever, for the NBA draft. But first, may I ask you about Xavier Pinson? Because last week, according to his IG, his Instagram, his Final Four was Nebraska, Arkansas, Georgia, and Auburn. And so then on Sunday night, he said, okay, going to make my decision tomorrow afternoon, KU or LSU. I'm like, what the hell happened to the Final Four that... So how does it go from those are his final four, but then the final two, neither one are a part of the final four that he had? So that was a very unique turn of events. And so then some people immediately claiming, KU's not even interested in him. He's doing that just to irritate Mizzou fans. But I don't know. I like Xavier Pinson. I think he can be an electric scorer when he's on. We've talked about this. I think he can be a dynamic player if you get him to play right all the time. And so he goes to LSU.
Because he knows his worth.
Let's take a look at this. LSU. Can he take as many shots as he wants at LSU? Yes. Is there a tremendous emphasis on defense at LSU? No. And there's at least the outside shot that he actually is turning pro by going to LSU now and getting a decent paycheck. So, I mean, I don't know.
Hashtag know your worth.
There's a lot of things that can play in this. And he did. It was funny going to LSU. He posted know your worth. I don't know if you meant to be funny about that. But so do you think there was actually any interest from KU? I guess it doesn't matter now, or is he just trolling? But what do you think of Pinson going to LSU?
Well, first of all, I love the hashtag know your worth. Right.
Will Wade knows your worth, and here it is.
And the fact that his Final Four, it was, I'm with you. Like, I'm like, what is happening right now?
But anyway, someone tell him the Final Four, then the two they're usually a part of the four, but then right, because that wasn't the Final Four then.
So. Yeah, that was confusing for me too. But I do think Kansas was interested in X. They should be. With X, honestly, with his Final Two, though, both situations made sense for him. As far as coming right in,
Nate didn't want him. By the way, he told me in the office yesterday. I'm glad
Nate was down. Okay,
after, he didn't want him
after the NCAA tournament. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I think with the Kansas situation, you get a point guard that is a dynamic playmaking guard that can blow by a guy with his first step and can get 2 feet in the paint and make some plays. I think X is a very good player. I would say this last year, a little bit up and down, but we've seen enough from X, especially his sophomore year, at the end of his sophomore year, and last year, too. He had some huge games.
Self would have made him an all-conference player. I'm just going to say that, in my opinion. He would have been very good under Self.
Yeah, you go to KU, you're with Coach Self, a guy that has developed multiple point guards that are currently, you know, playing professionally. And that's a great fit. And I think with the LSU side of it, you're right. I mean, it's more freedom for him to do a lot of different things. I think also Javonte Smart, that is in the draft, he's going to keep his name in. He's going to sign with an agent. Javonte's not back, so that means X can come right away, come in right away, start. And I do think there's something to be said for, I think he wanted to stay in the SEC a little bit. I think that's a bigger piece of this than the Kansas-Mizzou thing. I think it's staying in the SEC. I think that's why his original Final Four had a couple SEC teams in there. Just the fact that he goes to LSU, you know, that was unexpected. It's a good fit for him.
We would have had, and he won't get benched for not playing defense down there, but we would have had so much fun. And maybe it wouldn't have been fun for me at some point, but we would have had so much fun just on for this show's purposes. I wanted Pinson to go to KU.
Because
every game we would have, it would have been whatever it was. You would have been mad. I would have been mad. Every game, someone would have been pissed off about what they saw, and it would have been right. I'm not kidding. I think like of all the places he could go, the best chance for him to unlock his full potential and become the player that I thought he could be, that John Sunbelt thought he could be. And I take no pleasure in saying this. I'm a Mizzou fan, but like if he would have gone to Kansas, I would. Oh boy.
Ooh, yeah. Watch. Yeah, some guys aren't cut out for it.
Are you cut out for it?
Absolutely not.
Right.
I think, Stephen, you would agree with this. With X, and we talked about this going into the NCAA tournament. We talked about when Mizzou was struggling. Like the one play when Mizzou won games and, you know, they were competitive. Yeah, Jeremiah Tolman playing well and Drew Smith playing well. But Xavier Pinson just took Mizzou to a different level when he was right. And I think that, to me, is the most disappointing thing of how it ended for Xavier Pinson, especially, too, seeing X as a freshman to where he was as a junior. I mean, that sophomore year, he just took a substantial growth. And there's areas that X has to improve where, you know, he can't be running from areas of his own game that he has to improve upon. Taking care of the ball, being more consistent, getting a little bit stronger, being more of an impact defensively. All those things I think he would have got with Bill Self right away. You know, I thought if Kansas is in his final two, he should go to Kansas. That was my original thought. Now, again, LSU is not necessarily a bad fit for him because of the Javonte Smart leaving, Cameron Thomas leaving. You know, there's going to be shots there for X. He's going to have to be on the floor for that team, especially with his ability to play make. In their offense, too, at LSU, it's very much, you know, athleticism, play with pace, play with tempo, get up and down, run the floor. And I think that style of play X was looking for, and I think that's why he chose LSU.
Okay, let's move over to some of the issues on the Kansas side of things, because Bryce Thompson enters the transfer portal. And I think one of the things that's interesting to see about all this, Jarrett, is I don't know that we'll have a clear idea how badly did a school want to keep a kid. You know, is a kid transferring? Like, sometimes you get a glimpse from a coach because he'll say, look, we really tried to convince him to stay, and he just didn't want to. And then you get a pretty good idea. But other times, you wonder, is this the kid's decision? Is this the coach's decision? Is it a little bit of both? Bryce Thompson was a highly, highly touted recruit coming in. He dealt with injuries and then just never was able to put it together after the injuries his freshman year. What do you make of him deciding to transfer from Kansas?
Another shock for me. Yeah, I said this the other day. I mean, when I see these freshmen, too, that are highly touted, and they're putting their names in the portal, and you know it's just a patience thing. It's an unwillingness to stay patient. And now you talk to college coaches, and they're talking to seniors who are, you know, not going to commit unless they're promised 25 minutes per game. And that's just shocking to me because, you know, the days of coming in as a freshman, and look, some freshmen are just more advanced than others, and they do get that time. You know, those players are really unique and really special, and there's not a lot of those players that come to college basketball that can come in right away, start, play a bunch of minutes, and be impactful, especially when you're going to a program like Kansas that is a winning program that has established a success of player development, especially with point guards and combo guards that we've just talked about. I think this is a little bit, too, of, you know, what's the inner circle like? Who's telling, you know, these freshmen, this isn't just Bryce, this is around college basketball of, we'll put your name in the portal and go try to find a better opportunity. And then you look back, and I think there's going to be more failures out of this than there are successes. And every kid's situation is different. There are, you know, successes that are out there with transferring where it makes sense. And, you know, the Quentin Grimes factor, right? That to me is a success. But I think you look at where Kansas is at and, you know, the guards that are coming in, Bobby Pettiford, the point guard coming in. I think DeJuan Harris is a very emerging point guard that could do some things in his second, third year for KU. You know, I just don't know what it was that, number one, put Bryce in the portal of why he would decide to do that when, to me, you know, he was the future, kind of a future guard pillar for Kansas that had a bright future. And I'm curious to see where he goes and where the fit is and where he wants to go and why he's wanting to do that. But it was a shock to me. I know the Kansas staff was high on him when they got him. I was excited for KU when they got him too, because I just felt that he was going to be a really, you know, unique guard for them that could really do some things off the bounce, had athleticism, could defend. And look, injuries and COVID and the mental aspect of this is another thing. I think that weight took its toll probably on Bryce. And I think that's another piece of this too. So it's not just one thing, but it was a surprise. And, you know, I wish the kid well, but I do think really where he was at and the fit he was at and the future that he had at Kansas was bright.
So this is just anecdotal. So maybe since you study it across the board more, you can tell me that this is stupid. But I look at the situation with Quentin Grimes.
No, that is so stupid.
And now Bryce Thompson, very highly touted players that had big times five-star rankings that needed some work. You know, it was going to take some time for them to develop. But because they had those big five-star tags with them, they weren't willing to stick it out and develop. So they transferred somewhere. He might go on to have the same kind of career that Grimes had at Houston. On the flip side, players like Devontae Graham and Frank Mason come to Kansas with very little rankings behind them. No assumption whatsoever that they're going to come and play right away and star at Kansas or anything. They stick it out and turn into All-Americans that help Kansas, you know, achieve at an incredibly high level and then go to the NBA. I almost feel like if I'm Kansas, I'd rather go after guys that are second-tier recruits that'll actually stick around for a while and have some patience than go after kids like that. Is that stupid? Like, especially with the transfer portal being what it is now. What is your thought on the way that all plays out now?
I think what you're saying is what every blue blood like KU is looking at. I think North Carolina's in this game. I think Duke's in this game. You know, I think Michigan State's in this game, Kentucky. I think all these coaches are going to have to really think. I mean, you look at what Kentucky dealt with. You look at what Duke dealt with.
And sorry to interrupt, but like, isn't this how Villanova built a couple of national championship teams?
No question. It's a great example, actually. I think when you look at Villanova, too, they have set parameters. I mean, that is a machine of what they identify in recruiting. And they dig and they dig and they do their due diligence on what they're getting. What kind of person are they getting? What kind of family are they getting? And when I say family, you know, what's that inner circle made of? I go back to that because I think coaches have a challenge. And again, Nate, I've talked to you about this before. It's also, you know, a coach not selling a kid a bag of goods that's not true. That's not factual. But I think when you have these type of schools like KU, like Duke, like Kentucky, they can be brutally honest, you know, and that's the thing. When you sign on the dotted line and you say you're committed and you make your tweet and your post that you're 100% committed, then you're committed. And when you go to these, I mean, like going to Bill Self's program when you're a freshman, whether you're a five-star or a three-star, one of my favorite things every year, it literally is going to a Bill Self practice in October, because in that practice, they're going to go for about 2.5 hours. It's going to be right after they go through, you know, that conditioning period and boot camp, and then they're in practice. Those practices are intense. They're physical. It's a chance for Bill Self to really break down freshmen. And he does it with every freshman, and it's the right thing to do because those players will show growth. By the time January, February hits, those players will break through if they stay the course, if they're committed. I think when you see these four stars and five stars, and Duke just went through this, and my boss, Trajan Langdon, who played at Duke, who's our general manager, I asked him point blank, like, has Duke ever had a player that has you know, shut it down at Duke and, you know, just said, I'm done playing, like Jalen Johnson did this year. And there's not been a player that's done that. I don't even know if there's a player that necessarily transferred from Duke that was as highly touted, too, as Jalen. Duke was dealing with this in this situation all year, and I think it impacted their success, honestly. Kentucky's the same way with some of their highly recruited five-star guys that they brought in transfers that were older players, that were proven players. They struggled all year. And a lot of that had to do with what they were dealing with things that weren't even on the floor. They were things that were just being coachable, being pushed, you know, wanting to just have success right out of the gate. That doesn't always happen. That's okay. It's like this panic that if you don't have success in November, December, January, and you're a five-star, then you're going to go transfer. Well, that's not necessarily the best decision. And I think that's where coaches right now are dealing with, especially with obviously the rule, and where names can just, you know, anybody can put their name in now and transfer. That to me is, it's a snowball effect. It's just this storm that's brewing that every school's dealing with this. And, I mean, it's Bryce Thompson, it's Adam Miller at Illinois. You know, these players that they were going to be focal points of their programs moving forward. They just didn't want to be patient with that. And that, to me, is a frustration for coaches. I think it's a frustration, too, down the line when these players transfer. I hope they have success. But what really is success? Is it you going to a better situation? Or is it you looking in the mirror and identifying who you are as a player and as a person and where you need to improve if you have any chance to play at the next level? And it's very, very difficult to play in the NBA. You can go play overseas. Playing in the NBA is extremely difficult. So focus on your college career, commit yourself, and work, and appreciate what you have, too. That's another part of this as well.
Okay, we got less than 60 seconds, so we'll answer these real quick. Jalen Wilson and Ochai Agbaji declare for the NBA draft, retain college eligibility. You think either one stays in the draft?
I don't. I think both those guys are getting information, and I think that's important. They got to make decisions for themselves. I think with this draft, you know, it's a good draft. I will say that. There's some star talent in this draft. You know, I think right now with the rule, you got, you know, again, this touches on going back to KU, having, you know, better season as individually and as a whole. I think both these guys can make an impact and maybe take a step forward next year. There were a lot of things about this year, not just, you know, the COVID pandemic, but obviously Jalen Wilson got hit by that and was affected by that. Ochai took a big step forward this last year. You know, do I think he could take another step forward? Yeah, I do. But I think those are decisions they're just going to have to make. If they like college, if they like playing for Coach Self, if they know they can get better and they want to have a better season and they want to help themselves, you know, there's no rush through this process with those guys.
Did you watch Last Chance U?
Oh, I loved it.
You see KJ flipped his commitment?
I did not see that. No, I saw. I've been following Joe Hampton a lot though, but I didn't see that one.
He flipped from USC to Texas Tech. So he's coming to the Big 12. Most people don't know what I'm talking about, but if you watch Last Chance U, that's friggin' awesome.
Oh, wow.
Oh, what a Mizzou to get KJ, but that's fine. He's going to Texas Tech. Let's go. Hey,
what
Jarrett.
What a fit.
It's a hell of a fit. Jarrett Sutton, thank you so much for the time. We will talk to you again very soon.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back after this on WHB.